The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
CIO Talk Radio is brought to you by Citrix, offering GoToAssist, remote support made easy.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is, what would it take for collective intelligence to become a reality? And our guests for today's show are Steve Rubinow, who is the Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer with NYSE Euronext. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
How are you, sir? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Awesome. And we have Tom Fountain, who's the Vice President and Chief Information Officer with Bungie Limited. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. How are you? Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much again. Now, the topic which we have picked up today, to some it would look like the Star Trek version of what we want to be, but then let's also look at what all we already have in place which could be leveraged to fulfill this dream or to realize this dream. So we talk about cloud and we talk about crowd whenever we define collective intelligence. And in fact, this whole concept of collective intelligence is not new. It was in fact coined decades ago, but we did not have the infrastructure or the paradigms available which could make this possible. Now, are we not doing the same thing today already and just wrapping it into this new word or an old word which has been brought out again, which is collective intelligence? Or what is the incremental change and or benefit that this collective intelligence approach will bring? So Tom, let's start with you.
Okay, great. Thank you. When I look at collective intelligence, it is a term that is very, very broad. And I would say that over the past few decades even, most of the work in the IT function has been in two particular disciplines. One around transactional systems, which provide the standard order taking and management capabilities. And then secondly, on the ability to integrate with customers and suppliers and partners, largely in the e-commerce era and beyond. Collective intelligence to me looks far beyond that and says, how do we extract information, intelligence, and the like that will help us run our businesses more effectively, more competitively? And the enlargement of that space really goes after this crowd and cloud concept, where that solution space is much, much broader than today's very narrow view.
So, Steve, in your eyes, as you've been dealing with cloud, I'm sure, in your organization, and crowd, I don't know how much of it, where do you see this is going?
Well, I agree with Tom to a great extent, and we've been doing things like this for a while. When I say things like this, I mean the following. We've been talking to customers. We've been soliciting input from wherever we can get it. And so we talk to customers. We've been talking to customers for a long time, both the business side of our customers and the technology side of our customers, to have them tell us, give a opine on what they think the industry should be doing, what they think we should be doing as a company. We also have the same relationship with certain vendors. We have the same relationship with academic institutions. Because we know we have not cornered the world on all the great ideas within the four walls of our company, and we need to reach out to people that we think could offer us valued opinions. Now, the crowd intelligence and the technologies that allow us to do that make it easier to establish this communication, make it easier for us to store it, refer to it, for other people to see it, and also to extend the reach to maybe even a broader participant base that we think could provide us with information. So we've been doing it now for a number of years in the most rudimentary way, and we're trying to make it easier to do by means of these great electronic tools and architectures that are becoming available. Having said that, it's not perfect, probably won't be for a while, but it gets better.
Now, while we always want to do better things and we want to get things cheaper and faster, do you think the corresponding investment that we would make in trying to rip apart certain things that we already are doing or start thinking differently, and we would invest towards changing mindset of not only IT but also the business constituents, is it truly worth it, Tom?
Well, I think we continue to search for better ways to solve today's problems and certainly prepare ourselves to deal with problems we don't even conceive of yet. As we try to tackle, you know, some of these world-scale problems, energy, environment, feeding the world, et cetera, the complexity is absolutely enormous. And as Steve was saying, as we expand our reach into unconventional sources of wisdom and capabilities, our ability to mix and match those will give us the platform from which we can respond, you know, ever more efficiently. And in a world with, you know, constrained resources and the like, being as absolutely efficient as possible in everything folks are doing will prove very, very valuable.
So, Steve, do you think we should be continuing this, but we may not have a true business case per se to make this happen?
Well, the answer is yes, but in terms of true business cases, and I've been doing this for a number of years, where you try and justify projects and you try and understand what is the proper metric for judging their value. And we can use the ROI or ROI family of metrics. Those are really convenient. But in the things that we're talking about, that may not be easy to derive, and it may not even be totally applicable. So I think there are some aspects of this where we can say we got a good idea based on input via one of these collective intelligence mechanisms, and that idea turned into a great product for the company. And that product yields so much revenue and so much in terms of contribution to earnings. And whether it's in whole or in part, we can contribute, trace it back to this. Well, we can make that kind of argument. The other part, which is also very common, is just intuitively, smart people working in the businesses, like people on this call and the people that we work with in our companies, et cetera, have a sense for there's value, that the money expended to realize that value is reasonable, and these are all subjective terms, I have to say that, but people make good, informed, educated assumptions about what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. So I always use extremes to make a point. So if I said to you that the support costs for this system were $1 a year, then no, we'd end the discussion right then and there and say $1, even if it brings us $1 and one penny worth of value, of course we'd spend the $1. If I told you it cost us $100 million to support it, you'd say, oh, gee, we should have a long discussion about that. So I think that there's a certain amount of math that goes into this, and there's a certain amount of educated business sentiment and intuition that says, I think that we're getting the value for this that we hope to, that the costs are reasonable, that we could probably improve upon it, but it makes sense to keep investing in it.
Now, while we want to do all this, who should be the evangelist? Who should be within the company say, you know what, this is next thing which is cool, and if it is R&D and or IT, which is going to say, let's try to see what's the next frontier, how is the business responding? Tom?
Yeah, I think from an evangelism point of view, there's a mix of constituents who all play a role in this. Certainly the CIO plays a pivotal role in connecting business and technology. Certainly the business internal customers see value creation, you know, as a goal for their company. As you go outside of your four walls, you're going to find folks who either represent an element of that collective intelligence or a set of service providers and so forth. And, you know, in typical, I'll say, free market fashion, the mix and match of those constituencies and objectives and motivations provide, you know, an opportunity and a platform for some very rich interaction. And I think each brings their own set of motivations and evangelism tendencies that will, you know, necessarily morph the approach to be most productive, both commercially and, you know, from some of these higher level social goals.
Now, if you were to look at collective intelligence, one of the so-called agenda is to bring humans and computers closer and together and have more camaraderie versus one driving the other. Steve, is it truly stretching the limits?
Well, you know, it's interesting when you ask that question because for those of you and for the listeners who follow Ray Kurzweil and his ideas about what he refers to as singularity, that in the not-too-distant future, meaning a few decades, not centuries, that computers will actually become smarter than humans, or at least have the capability. So maybe we'll leave the decision-making up to the computers. But in today's world, the collaborative ability is important, but the computers are a facilitation tool for the humans. And so we would all agree they make our lives easier, more productive, make it give us the ability to consider more alternatives more quickly. Sometimes there's a too many decisions to make and a richness of decision-making that is overwhelming. But putting those two together in the most productive way is exactly what we should be trying to do. And having said that, one of the exciting things about this is we're still on the cusp of trying to figure out the right model. Should we have something like this very specific ideation or collaboration tools that are designed just for this? And you will hear mixed reviews about how they work. Should we think about more general models like Facebooks of the world and using those for sharing information and collaborating? Yes and no. It depends who you talk to. So I think we're trying to discover what the right path is, but the synergies and the symbiosis between the technology and the human beings is critical, but we have to remember that the humans are still on top.
Now, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I absolutely agree, and you know, much of the discussions we have here and other places has to do with segmenting the work, if you will, between the place that it is best performed. Certainly the machines don't do much of what humans are best at, and certainly the reverse is true. What we tend to think about is a very complementary cooperative role, and if you think about instrumenting decisions and process flows, eventually what happens is you start to see a convergence that says the machine, through improved business rules, et cetera, starts to make a set of decisions that the human, quote-unquote, would make the same. And eventually you get to the point where it says, okay, for this class of decisions and actions, it's okay to let the machine make the call and proceed because it's exactly what the human would have done anyway. In other cases, when certain criteria are not met or are met, then absolutely it has to go, you know, toward the human for, you know, application of better judgment and things that certainly are nearly impossible to try to model into an algorithm. So, again, it'll be an evolution, and as Steve said, you know, it's a cooperative relationship that can produce tremendous results.
You know, and if I could add to that, Tom, I was in the middle of the heyday of the AI spring in the 80s, and I think if there's anything that I learned from that, where people were trying to get intelligent systems to be as good or better than human decision makers, I think the conclusion was that the combination of systems and humans was the sum was greater than the whole was greater than the sum of the parts. So humans by themselves, they have their failings. Machines by themselves, they have their failings. You put the two together, and you don't get 1 + 1 = 2. You get 1 + 1 = 3. And I think if we keep that in mind, we will continue just to get better and better.
Absolutely.
Now, what you say is 1 + 1 = 3, but sometimes, do you not see, I'm not trying to take a contrarian view or a pessimistic view, but sometimes when a human wants to over-rely on computer, then sometimes their true potential also gets undermined. So do you think 1 + 1 also could mean half?
Well, and again, my learnings from way back when were such that we used to call them expert systems at that time, and we used to say that the best person to use an expert system is an expert. So if you take a system, let's say we take in my world, let's say we take a complex financial engineering system that uses both numeric traits and unstructured text and subjective traits to make decisions. If you take a novice, the man on the street, and say, I have a very sophisticated system here to help you make the investment decisions, and really you don't know very much about investment decision making, but just rely on the computer, exactly to your point, the results will be undesirable. But if you take an expert and then you enhance their abilities with systems like this and the ability to tap other experts in the field through collaboration systems, then I'd be surprised if the results weren't better.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and also hear Tom, that what is his equation regarding what a human and computer can do together and what's the outcome is and where could it turn into half or where it could turn into 3 or 4 when your 1 + 1 is used as one part of the equation. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
There are a variety of tools on the market that allow you to remotely work on a client, colleague, or friend's computer. But what solution do you choose? The answer is simple. GoToAssist.
Brought to you by Citrix.
It's reliable, fast, and secure. And with the exceptional performance, it is no wonder why IT professionals choose GoToAssist. Troubleshoot in seconds. Try GoToAssist free for 30 days. Visit GoToAssist.com/CIO. That's GoToAssist.com/CIO. Unleash your support potential with GoToAssist.
Brought to you by Citrix.
It's remote support made easy.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So before the break, Steve had a formula that he laid out, which is 1 plus 1 equal to 3. And what we are looking at, and Tom, this is a question for you. What, in your view, what have you seen 1 plus 1 equal to becoming 3 versus half?
Well, I think largely in line with what Steve was saying, when you take the best of two components and you put them together, you're by definition you're enlarging the solution space, so to speak, right? The set of collective decisions, the exercising of analysis, et cetera, over a broader view, always gives you at least as good of an answer than the separate pieces then separately added. So I'm certainly on board with that, and I think. If we think consciously of segmenting the workloads and understanding what role the computer versus the human is best suited to play, I think very likely you're going to get the superior returns. On the flip side, when you don't think about that, then I think you are potentially in a situation where you'll get, you know, less than the sum. In cases, for example, if your environment is highly dynamic and changing frequently and, quote-unquote, the rules of the game are constantly changing, it's very difficult, I would suspect, for the computer to keep up with those inflection points and systemic shifts. It's going to take the judgment and experience of the human to recognize those changes and adapt the business plan to those. And so if you're not careful and you just let the machine do everything in that type of an environment, you could be making today's decisions based on yesterday's models and rules. And that may give you a poor performance in this new business climate, perhaps.
So, Tom, do you think the holy grail of collective intelligence could be is when, like, typically we have seen humans were supposed to think and analyze, and computers were supposed to process and do grunt work? Do you want to swap the roles, or you want to bring some balance on both sides?
Well, I think there's room for some balance on both sides. I mean, certainly that work segmentation I mentioned does facilitate the human performing the higher level work, you know, discovering patterns, applying judgment, things that certainly are difficult or impossible to model into a business rule, quote unquote. But certainly the machine, you know, has a tremendous capability to process information, to detect patterns, things that we've been doing for years and years. And it's the merge of those two that I think produces the most interesting and profitable results.
Now, Steve, why now? This has been there forever. And there is a definite motivation, which you defined earlier, and also maybe some rewards. But what's the urgency? Do we have everything else taken care of already, which actually is far more mission critical?
Well, I think we wouldn't do this to the exclusion of other things, but I think in every company's attempt to try and get better and better results and better leverage the technology and more importantly, the data that's available to them, again, both the structured and unstructured data, people constantly ask the question, I have more and more data than I've ever had to deal with before. How am I best leveraging that? Do I really understand all the value that's coming out of that data? And the kinds of systems that we're talking about are an attempt and an ongoing attempt and a good direction to make sure that we can leverage everything that's available to us in terms of problem-solving tools, communication tools in terms of understanding what other people think about a subject and how they can temper the outcome, and the underlying data that supports it, how do we make the best use of that? And the problem is only getting bigger because, again, I know from our industry that our network pipes are getting bigger and bigger because they're carrying more and more data all the time, that we're asked to process more information in smaller periods of time, that there's more information available to us. And are we getting the maximum utilization out of that, not just in terms of running a business operationally, but in terms of understanding what's going on in the business, what's going on in the world, and help us understand what we should do tomorrow and the next day? And every company is asking themselves that question, and these are the kinds of things that we're exploring to see if we can do a better – I know we can do a better job to make sure that we do a better job in the future.
Now, if we are looking at centralization of power and centralization of resources, so we have larger companies with big resources, so that means they can do big things. Now, this is similar to anyone who can go and latch onto a cloud and suddenly become a formidable provider of any type of service that they are actually selling, and compare that to any large organization which build their own internal infrastructure spending millions of dollars. If this is how we are kind of using a socialistic approach to saying, let's equalize the strength and level the playing field, then is that also introducing risk there where somebody who gets too much power too quick or too much leverage too quick could also misuse it? Steve, what do you think?
Well, there's always the potential for misuse and abuse. That's just the nature of human beings and technology. That can always happen. However, you know, I always look back in history and see if there's a model that we have that somehow relates to what we're talking about today. And as I always explain to people when I talk about cloud computing, and some people disagree with me on this, cloud computing in its most general sense is a concept that's about 50 years old, because for those that are young enough to or old enough to remember, there was a concept called time sharing, which was exactly the same thing, different technologies and not nearly as distributed and all those kinds of things. But same principles. And I don't know how much abuse and how much downside there was to the fact that people could use a centralized facility, whether it was in one particular location distributed among 10 countries, that served to the disadvantage of the users of it. And I think that the positives definitely outweigh the negatives, although we have to be concerned about that. For instance, many people's concerns about using the cloud, especially a public cloud, are security concerns. That's very much a concern of ours as well. We probably have above-average concerns about security given the nature of our business. And so we would tread very carefully about what kinds of information we would disseminate, what kinds of information we would use, what kind of access we'd provide to the sphere of influence that helps determine our industry. So we were very, very careful about that, because if we make a mistake, the cost of that mistake, it takes a long time to recover from that. But having said that, we certainly don't want to let any potential downsides inhibit us from making progress. We just have to do it at the right pace and accentuate the right priorities first.
So, Tom, in your view, what is this going to do for us? It's going to make individuals powerful or organizations more balanced with respect to what they can have as a leverage over us individual?
Well, yeah, I think we have many of these challenges even today. I mean, certainly large corporations have vast data holdings upon which they make decisions and conduct themselves in the marketplace. But yet you have individuals who participate, whether they're contributing information or capabilities or a customer of those types of capabilities. I think the balance issue, you know, needs to be maintained, you know, as we move forward in time, to where we keep this, a level playing field, and make sure that we have the opportunity for everyone to participate That's how the whole system, quote-unquote, gets better, is when the best ideas can find their way to market, the innovation can continue to drive forward the capabilities that are needed and rewarded in the marketplace. You know, the whole reason that new companies are formed and are successful is because they fill a need. And for one company or one group to shut out others, the whole system starts to die, if you will, because those new sources of needs and new sources of capabilities get shut off. So, you know, again, the free market principles here apply in that closing the system really effectively defeats the purpose. It can't be collective if we're limiting it to just a few big players. So I think, you know, people will need to assess their role in this broader future and understand that the strength comes from the cooperative nature, from the free market, and the ability for everyone to have an opportunity. And we'll go from there.
So in this model, Tom, do you think there's a way to throttle it the way, or is it like a binary? When I'm in there, then there's no turning back, and it's floodgates open, and it's going to get out of control.
Well, I think, you know, the constant challenge for everyone in business is the balance between free market and regulation, about the big guy, the small guy, et cetera. You know, those problems have been around forever. They'll continue to be around forever. You know, I think in some respects, particularly the early internet, there was a lot of self-policing because, again, people knew that if they didn't play by a set of rules, the whole thing fell apart. And I think the same types of norms will have to evolve. Certainly there'll be regulation, I'm sure, as part of it. But, you know, it's never an extreme, right? It's never all regulation, and it's never all what anybody just individually wants, right? There has to be that balance that's developed. And we'll have to work as a community to understand what rules of the road need to be established to make sure that we preserve the intent, you know, of developing this type of collective capability.
Steve, what, in your view, or what you've seen is a prevailing definition of collective intelligence in today's day and age when we do have the crowdsourcing concept coexisting with cloud computing, and they are different. But then what is that we are aspiring for?
Well, I think there's two dimensions that we're talking about here. One is the realization, and you've seen it more and more over the past few years for sure, where in previous years there used to be almost an exclusive reliance on numeric data to make decisions and to fuel these systems. Now more and more people are talking about, again, unstructured data that you can collect from a variety of sources, whether it be the person sitting next to you, whether it be your customers, whether it be news sources, and use that as input to these models. And harder to do than numeric data, but still very, very important to try and combine them in the proper ways. And then there's the technologies to support them and enable them and facilitate it. So whether it be cloud computing or whether it be an open, more collaborative environment that's not a public cloud, it's maybe not even a private cloud, it's more proprietary. That's another dimension as to what's the best, most effective, most secure, cost-effective, add all those dimensions to that part of the model, putting those all together. But I think what everyone is trying to do is try and collect the total set of information that you could conceivably think of adding value. And again, synthesizing that and putting it together in the proper way is a very difficult challenge. But trying to figure out how to do that and do it, technologically speaking, in a way that you can get a lot of participants on, that everyone buys into, that makes sense economically, that I think is the thing that we're all feeling our way through. We're trying to determine it ourselves. We're looking to examples of other companies that have had some modicum of success and saying, let's do what they're doing, and then we go.
So we'll take a quick break, but when we come back, Tom, I'd like to also see what you think about what's your definition of collective intelligence and what you're seeing in the marketplace and which is the right one. What's a good benchmark or what's a good, you can say, holy grail that we should use as an idol that we should worship in, or not exactly worship, but at least follow. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call call now toll-free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
There are a variety of tools on the market that allow you to remotely work on a client, colleague, or friend's computer. But what solution do you choose? The answer is simple. GoToAssist.
Brought to you by Citrix.
It's reliable, fast, and secure. And with the exceptional performance, it is no wonder why IT professionals choose GoToAssist. Troubleshoot in seconds. Try GoToAssist free for 30 days. Visit GoToAssist.com/CIO. That's GoToAssist.com/CIO. Unleash your support potential with GoToAssist.
Brought to you by Citrix.
It's remote support made easy.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjay Gall.
Welcome back. So, Tom, what's your definition of that ideal form of collective intelligence which we are trying to pursue? Or perhaps we should also look at what is a realistic and pragmatic definition of collective intelligence which we can realistically put in place?
Sure. When I think of collective intelligence, it's really one piece of a broader whole. Certainly understanding in terms of an ecosystem or, you know, this sphere around your organization, you certainly want to comprehend the information and gain insight and so forth into what is materially important to you, whether it's impacting a business decision, whether it's impacting your ability to execute a business process, et cetera. You want to bring in and leverage those elements of information, knowledge, and so forth. In a broader context, what makes this so valuable is the ability to connect between sensing and then analyzing and optimizing and then responding. And this collective intelligence plays a major role in terms of understanding that environment, why certain things are happening or will happen, and then what the operating constraints are, what the opportunities are in terms of the response you choose, typically through a business process, to an event or a predicted event. So really the intelligence part of it is a big element of this grander whole, but it's connecting that intelligence to what you're going to do with it and how you're going to make good decisions, turn them into profitable actions. That's really the end game that we discuss.
So in a way, Steve, I will come this. I'll ask this this question: is that if we are using it only for intelligence, that's like undermining the true potential. So if you got 1 million people helping you make a good decision, but you got 5 people executing it, would you not want to scale that execution effort as well? And let's use this paradigm to actually execute. So 1 million people help you decide, and then 2 million people help you execute in a split second.
Well, I think the answer to that is it depends. It's one of those great questions where the answer is it depends. It depends what we're trying to accomplish here. So one can develop models of what the optimal use of human resources are and see how this fits. In the general, it's hard to say what the ratios should be, whether it be 1-to-1, 2-to-1, 1-to-1.5. I'm not really sure. We just want to make sure that we're leveraging human potential to the benefit of whatever our company goal is. And you know, let me add to that some of the obstacles that we have to overcome when we talk about collective intelligence. And when you throw out the number 1 million, if we have 1 million potential contributors to this this crowd intelligence sourcing. One has to decide, and this is the problems with any kind of knowledge network on the internet today, who is it that you're talking to? Are they who they say they are? Because one can never know for sure. What are their credentials to offer you an educated opinion on a particular subject? And what are those, assuming you can verify the credentials, what are they worth? And then even more importantly than who they are and what their credentials are for offering an opinion, what has been their track record? Because their reputation outweighs both their who they are and their ability, at least their on paper, the ability to contribute. And assessing that, measuring that, factoring that into a model so that of the million people that might be giving you contributions, five of them really should be counted and the other remainder of the million are they're noise and we should record them, but not really influential because of these factors. Everyone is still trying to figure out how to do that.
So now how much of a dependence or in fact let's inventory the type of which are the legs of the stool of this collective intelligence? You're looking at human being, you're looking at computers. And what else, which will make the third or fourth leg of the stool on which this collective intelligence could sit tall? Tom?
Actually, the breadth of intelligence elements is significant, and it's going to be context-dependent. So I'll just make an example. For an agriculture company like ourselves, weather is potentially a major factor. The availability of transportation channels to move product from one location in the world to another is highly relevant. Environmental aspects, again, very relevant. You could probably make a very broad list for each individual company, intersect all of that, and you're going to end up with, you know, a very large, broad set of potential information that someone in the group is going to find very, very valuable.
Now, if we are looking at people who are less social, Steve, what are you going to do with them in this paradigm if you wanted to make it successful? Or does it matter that if they are willing to contribute and or they're willing to jump on this new bandwagon, which you say as the boss that, hey, you got to go in this route and kind of create a camaraderie between all the different entities that are out there, whether more humans or more computers?
Well, just as if we were having a meeting, and all of us were sitting in the same room, certain people are going to be more communicative than others, and that's just a function of being human beings. When you expand it to electronic means of communication, some of the principles are the same, and I don't want to get too simplistic, but you really boil it down to just the proper incentives. Some people want to contribute because they just want to be recognized for their contributions, and that alone is enough for them. Other people need to be find incentives as though they're competing in a contest, or you're paying them money for their ideas, and the better the idea, whether you decide or whether you have part of the crowd or the cloud vote on the quality of their idea, and they get compensated, whatever the compensation mechanism is accordingly, I think we could come up with a whole host of incentive models to get people to participate and contribute more so than their natural inclination.
So, Tom, what do you think? What is that you would feel as you can say, the limitations of individuals or computers which would prevent from us to achieve the final holy grail when it comes to collective intelligence?
Well, you know, first let me comment on Steve's point, because it is very important. The role of the individual can potentially go from near zero to 100. There are so many ways to interact with this big collective intelligence notion, whether it's through face-to-face contact and that information then finds its way into digital form, whether it's blog postings, whether it's emails, whether it's the actions and so forth. I'm not too worried that there won't be opportunities for individuals to contribute whatever they have to offer into this collective notion. Whether people choose to do that or not comes back to, as Steve said, their motivations, but I think there will be a very rich set of ways for absolutely everyone to participate should they choose to. Some of the other fundamental limitations and things that will certainly challenge us is, again, what Steve said about the conversion of non-digital data into a form that can be processed, if you will. You know, certainly the spoken word and other could be very, very important and material to a decision of someone else in the system, so to speak. How does that information get collected, processed, and made available to either a human or a computer to process? There's a whole host of work that needs to be done for that transcription, we'll call it. And then, as Steve said, the scoring, if you will, as to how valuable, how important, how relevant, how meaningful, how genuine that element of knowledge may be, that classification scheme needs to be built. And then the systems that would use that information have to then accommodate that scoring system to know how to weight these different inputs that come from various sources. That is a whole host of new work that needs to be done, undoubtedly is being worked and has been worked in universities and other companies for a long time. What you see in a company like a Facebook or other social networking firms is really the first step of the process, which is basically digitizing people's contributions, pictures, blog postings, wall postings, etc. Now the trick becomes, how do we harvest all of that and convert it into a quote-unquote usable, scored, evaluated form? So I fully expect the innovation, you know, to continue very fast down that track, because now you have a base of, you know, half a billion or a billion people who are potentially there to contribute. How does people, you know, how do companies start to tap into that? Undoubtedly, it'll start with the consumer product goods companies and so on, because these are their customers. So the, you know, the work that has already gone on in terms of reading blogs and doing brand studies and all kinds of things, that's really the precursor for what the industrial companies, et cetera, will need later as they start to execute their supply chains more efficiently and other aspects of how they do their work, separate from the branding marketing work that really is the focus much of today's social networking.
Now, we have a business reason for adopting this, or at least trying this. And this is a change management issue, because you want the whole crew to also come become aligned, including business and IT users. What is the sell job you have to do on them? What is in it for them, Steve?
Well, yeah, I think it's like the promoting any new concept within a company. You find yourself, sometimes you find yourself a committee of one, and that you think it's a good idea, and you've got to convince others. More often, you've got a small group of people. When you talk about it with them, they say, that's a fantastic idea. And then it's just really a diffusion of innovation problems, so to speak, through the company, where you have, and I think we mentioned evangelists earlier in the show, where you evangelize the concept to the people that you need to, the people that need to be participants, the people that need to be funders, and whatever other role they might, and users of the system, and whatever role other roles they might play. And then again, not to get too cliche, but nothing succeeds like success. So you start with something that's small, manageable, prove your point, and grow it from there, assuming that it's headed in the right direction, and just keep building upon it until tune it and take different turns as you need to, and just keep enhancing it, providing that everyone is seeing the value that's coming from it.
So you do not see any inventory. If you were to inventory what's in it for them, there were two or three points that somebody comes and asks you, okay, so I'm ready to adopt. I have the faith in your leadership. I'm ready to do it. But what's in it for me as an individual to jump on this? What is your answer?
I think if you go, if you look at your objectives, whether it be the objectives for the company, your objectives for your department, your objectives as an individual within your company, and if you can make a very believable argument as, this is how I believe that these will help you achieve your objective or multiple objectives, it's really as simple as trying to factor that into the equation. I don't think it should take a huge leap of faith, because then it sounds a little bit like fantasy or science fiction. But if it's believable, then I think it's just fostering the goals of the company.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages. And now let's put on the table security and privacy issue that we are dealing with when it comes to cloud. And when you're looking at crowdsourcing, then everybody has their own opinions, and they would have conflicts, and they would have a different way to present the data, and it has to be interpreted in one common language for it to make sense. Otherwise, there'll be chaos. You have these existing problems. If we have not been able to get over them yet, is it too early to start this journey? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and explore.
market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
There are a variety of tools on the market that allow you to remotely work on a client, colleague, or friend's computer. But what solution do you choose? The answer is simple. Go to Assist.
Brought to you by Citrix.
It's reliable, fast, and secure. And with the exceptional performance, it is no wonder why IT professionals choose GoToAssist. Troubleshoot in seconds. Try GoToAssist free for 30 days. Visit GoToAssist.com/CIO. That's GoToAssist.com/CIO. Unleash your support potential with GoToAssist.
Brought to you by Citrix.
It's remote support made easy.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval.com. Visit today.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So, Tom, question for you. Is it really too early, because we do see in crowdsourcing and or cloud computing, we have some inherent issues which have not been resolved yet. And this is collective intelligence basically is trying to take the two and get the most out of it.
I would say it's never too early to start thinking and thinking pretty hard about what both the environment will evolve toward and what your participation and needs are going to be in the future. The sooner you get that thought and visibility, the more accurately you're going to lay out your plans. Certainly in a highly dynamic environment, you'll need to put the right degree of robustness in your plans. You don't certainly want to make a big commitment in a time period when there's still a great deal of volatility in the direction that the industry or a certain element may take. So you need to do some careful planning, certainly. But I think if you are not beginning to think hard about how you can take advantage of these two macro trends, both cloud and crowd, I think you run the risk of falling behind to the point where it'll be very difficult to get caught up. And every company has to make the decision where on the curve they need to be. Are they out on the bleeding edge? Because that's where the value for that industry or company is going to be. Are they going to be a fast follower, or are they going to wait until it's very, very mature and they can invest at lower cost? You have to make those decisions and then set your horizons accordingly. But for those who see a great promise in this cloud and or crowd, it's certainly high time to be thinking very hard about how to fit that in your strategic plan.
So, Steve, do you see light at the end of the tunnel on the specific problems or respective problems that we know are inherent in the very models when it talk about crowdsourcing and or cloud computing? Are they going to get solved soon?
Well, I don't know if they get solved soon. I think that when we're trying to predict the future with regard to many things, including technology, it's easier to say what will happen. It's hard to put a time frame on it. So, your question about the light at the end of the tunnel, I'm sure that the light will get brighter and brighter, and then we'll probably enter into a new tunnel, and then we'll have to find a new light at the end of that tunnel. But there's no doubt in my mind that these things provide value. They're not a fad. They're not transitive, and they'll be here today and gone tomorrow. And you've got huge communities of people thinking about this, trying to solve the problems, and there will be some stumbling blocks along the way, and there'll be some war stories that will get in the press and people will be discouraged for a little bit, or they'll be educational and serve to warn them to avoid these mistakes. And we will just keep making progress, just like we have and any other kind of technology. You know, and I was thinking a little bit of what Tom was saying, and of course I agree in his most previous comments. And everyone's favorite example of innovation today, or one of their favorite examples, is to talk about Apple. And if I understand the Apple design philosophy correctly, what they don't do is say, here's what we'd like to do, and here are all the constraints in the world today that will prevent us from doing a lot of these things. So let's figure out what we can do within the constraints. But rather they say, here's what the ideal would be, even if only a few people understand what that means. Here's what the ideal will be, and let's not let the constraints get in our way, because we know that even if they're barriers today, we will find ways, or other people will find ways, to remove them in the near future. So let's focus on what we want it to be, as opposed to what we're limited to today. And I think we're trying to take that approach as well.
So, Steve, again, who do you think should own this business this project? And will you call this as an IT or a business project?
I would think it's joint, and I think that's probably the politically correct answer. I would say from a technology perspective, probably technologies are more likely to lead the effort. But it's got to be joint, because one operating it without the cooperation of the other, I think it will end up with not the best possible adoption model, not necessarily heading in the right direction. So I think it's certainly a partnership, to use an overused word, but that is what it is.
Tom, do you think that given how the technology on demand is available on the cloud, even while we're using cloud computing, but then even the services for open collaboration that we want, even that could be just bought or rented in a heartbeat, then truly should CIO try to become a Hercules and take this on as a project and take responsibility for its success or for a failure?
Well, I think history is littered with CIOs who try to do too much and make too many of the decisions all on their own, because there is always a business context to what IT does. And I think it's absolutely a joint project, as Steve said. Certainly, there are specialties that can be brought to the table. The CIO can bring the technology aspects, obviously, the information management, et cetera, et cetera. But remember that we're talking about the intelligence and its application to the success of the business. I don't know many CIOs who are that deep in every functional area of their business, every line of business, every product, et cetera, to be able to put into context how that information and intelligence is most applicable or profitably applied to all those different facets of the business. The real winners will be those companies who can bring together those, let's call them internal communities of interest, to sort out what would be the most profitable information to bring in, the best way to use that productively, what role this company wants to play in that external environment, and put those factors together and lay out that plan. That'll build more consensus, it'll build more value, it'll reduce risk, frankly, as well. So I think the business leaders, including the CIO, who recognize that early, foster that type of collaborative approach, and proactively develop the plan and take that forward, are in the best position to succeed.
Steve, do you think we need a ripping apart of the infrastructure and or anything within the organization? And this is a very quick answer. I need 30 seconds. And also change any mindsets or any leadership style to make this happen?
I think that we are changing leadership style, because these things facilitate your ability to think. And I think people have to think about, organizationally speaking, how work gets done, collaboration networks that reach far outside the corporation. So there is a new way of thinking that's involved here. But to end on a very positive note, if we can develop systems like IBM has where a computer can beat humans at the game of Jeopardy, then we've got lots of exciting things ahead of us.
Tom, what do you think is what we need to do differently? And if at all there are changes that have to be brought about, then are they realistic and can we handle that?
Yeah, the trend certainly for the last number of years is for IT organizations to extend their mission to very much focus on the creation of business value. That draws with it many building blocks that need to be put in place, both organizational development-wise, financial management capabilities within IT, the internal processes that IT uses to manage its function. That extension of the mission deeper into the business will naturally lead us to that more effective joint partnership with our internal customers and eventually external customers to put us in the position that I described a moment ago. So it, I think it's an evolution that has been going on in IT, and I think it absolutely needs to continue in that direction so that IT really, you know, focuses on the integration of technology and services to create value and carefully choosing the core and context activities that either it should focus on internally or source from external sources.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, thank you so much, Tom and Steve. It was a fun discussion, and hopefully collective intelligence will truly become a reality if we are keeping our positive spirits high and also make the required changes in our organizations. Thank you so much. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog Gall, your talk show host. If you have any questions, send us to views@ciotalkradio.com and views@ciotalkradio.com. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.